As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm George Ellick and welcome to the weekend preview on the Athletic Football Podcast, sponsored by Bet365. On Fridays, we usually preview the best of the weekend's Premier League action, but as it's the international break, we'll mix it up a little bit, and I've got Bet365's Steve Freeth alongside me to help. Steve, I'm coming to you off on holiday in Madeira. Last night on my walk home, I walked past a statue of the great Cristiano Ronaldo. So I'm wondering, who is the best footballer born near to wherever you are at the moment?
Don't throw that at me. I think Stan Collymore was born in Stone, where I'm close to. So
any Stan statues around the corner from where you live?
There isn't. No. But I think I seem to remember Stan Collymore being born in Stone. So maybe I'll go with that. And then, of course, about half hour later, I'll remember a famous one. So listen, Stan was a great player in his day.
Sadly, normal host Dan Bardell is under the weather today. So get well soon to Dan from all of us, and we look forward to having him back hosting with us next week.
He's suffering, George, only from Sunday at Spurs, isn't he? I presume.
I know.
I think Son give the Villa boys a bit of treatment after they'd been talking about the top six. But you know me,
Steve. It doesn't get lower. Sticking the knife in somebody, no right of reply. He's lying ill in bed and you're having a go at him on the podcast. Absolutely outrageous.
I couldn't resist, George.
Before we look ahead to the England action and international stuff, we're going to look quickly back at what happened last weekend and a couple of the outright markets as well, and how they've been affected. And of course, we have to start with the big game of last weekend, last Sunday afternoon, Liverpool 2, Manchester City 2, a game that we previewed on here. And I mentioned how I thought that maybe the market had a little bit of disrespect towards Liverpool, but how this was going to be a game that was going to teach us a lot about two of the three sides who look most destined to get there. It was an incredible game, or I should say an incredible second half, with Mo Salah scoring one of the goals of the season so far. From what you saw, how much do you reckon we learnt about both sides and their title credentials?
Well, maybe that James Milner might not play too often in those type of games. And we did tip him up, didn't we, at 4-1 to be booked as well. Great career that he's had, of course. And he'll probably play a lot more games in the future. But, I mean, as regards to the game, like you said, the second half was fantastic. You know, the first half, Manchester City dominating. I think Liverpool only had one shot, didn't they? 0.01 of an XG against 0.52 for Manchester City. And Jurgen Klopp just saying basically that he just glad that there was such thing as half time, where he could go in and just change a lot of things, really. And they come out firing. And as a neutral, George, I absolutely really enjoyed the game. But as regards of the outright, not a great deal changed, really. We started the weekend with Manchester City at even money, Chelsea second best at 11-4, and Liverpool at 7-2. And we finished with it at City at 10-11, so in slightly into odds on Chelsea at 5-2, and Liverpool just slightly shortened at 4-1. I think the biggest losers in the outright market were Manchester United, who drifted out to 16s in a weekend, well, a Sunday, when there were so many crazy results all around Europe. I suppose the big factor for me, the Manchester City had an exhausting week, didn't they, against three sides of all quality. They'd won the XG battle all three games, and they conceded 7 shots on target after facing Lukaku, Messi, Neymar, Mbappe, Salah and Mane. So maybe Manchester City the slight winners.
Yeah, I saw some Manchester United fans on Twitter saying it was a great result for them, and I admire their...
You always do see Manchester United fans on Twitter, George.
I admire their optimism that a point between those two teams is a great result for them. You have to dream, don't you? Yeah, I mean, I've said on this podcast a lot that I think Liverpool are the team, you know, currently at 4-1 who look the value for me. But I do think, having watched that, it was two moments of incredible individual quality from Salah that gave the Liverpool the lead twice. And in terms of the disparity between the two sides, even though it was at Anfield, for the majority of the game, Manchester City were by far the better team in terms of the way that they were able to approach the game. We saw Jurgen Klopp in his post-match interview talking about how hard it is to cope with the way that Manchester City attack. And I think, yeah, probably my expectations of Liverpool being as close as I thought they were to City were probably dampened, even though they came so close to taking the 3 points. I think we saw there just that there is a quality gap, possibly, even between Manchester City and the chasing pack. But certainly for Liverpool, a result that keeps them in the race, but maybe a little bit humbling. You know, a couple of years ago in that incredible title race where both teams were so dominant at the top end of the table, it felt like there was very little to choose between them. I'm not necessarily sure that's the case now. But I mentioned Salah, because rightly so, after that performance, after that goal, which I think is one of those goals that gets better every time you see it, the balance, the footwork, the incredible, just the way that he picks up the ball with his back to goal in that position to beat the players he beats, the quality of defender, and then get that finish away past Edison was just remarkable. A lot of talk, and rightly so, about him for player of the year, a lot of talk about him for top goal scorer. How the markets reacted to that performance from Salah?
Yeah, well, of course, there's been a lot of interest in Salah since that Sunday performance, George. Listen, he has been 16-1 to win the PFA for the second time in his career. I think he won it in 2018, but he's now into 4-1 joint favouritism with Ronaldo after he tied up a number of elite players up in knots like that goal that you mentioned. And it was also his 46th assist for Liverpool with that Mane goal as well. He's 4-1 joint favourite with Ronaldo. KDB at 6-1. I'm not sure he can win it again. Lukaku hasn't scored for a month. He's 8-1. Grealish on the drift at 14. And then Phil Foden actually was nibbled into 25-1. But yeah, clearly you can't just look at one game. But the guy just never gets injured, does he? I mean, how many games has he missed over the years? He's been absolutely incredible. Disciplinary-wise, he's incredible. I think he averages one booking a season. And I think he's already had his booking for the season this season as well. And he more or less guarantees you 20-plus goals a season. Just look at it, 32 goals, 22 goals, 19, 22. He's already on six. And he's 11-4, third favourite to be top goal scorer. I think that should be shorter. Lukaku's fav at 12-5 with Ronaldo at 5-2. How often is Ronaldo going to play every week? Is he on penalties? Is Lukaku on penalties? Salah will be on penalties, we know that. And he's a goal-scoring machine. I think he should be favourite for the Premier League Golden Boot, personally. I know he might miss a couple of games with the Cup of Nations, but maybe that's only two in Premier League games in January.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I think if I was going to have a bet in that market, certainly the 11-4 Salah. It doesn't seem right that he's the least likely of the three there. So I'm in agreement. A double tip there for the listeners between me and Steve there for Salah, 11-4. I mean, there's, I think, correctly some talk about whether or not he is on form, the best player in the world at the moment. Now, you know, he is 50-1 for the Ballon d'Or. That's not going to happen because of the year he's had. But I'd be very interested to see prices early next year for him to win it next season, because it does feel like there's a growing sentiment towards appreciating just how good he is. And given next season, we're going to have a World Cup right towards the back end of the year. It feels to me kind of ripe for somebody maybe who doesn't play for a country, who are normally going to be vying for major honours at major tournaments, to get appreciated properly. So no betting there yet, but one to keep an eye on. Salah, certainly the cream of the crop at the moment, not only in the Premier League, but in world football as well. I was lucky enough to go to a Premier League game. Doesn't happen very often. Hasn't happened, I don't think, since around November 2019. But I was at West Ham 1, Brentford 2, sitting on my hands in the home end, whilst probably wanting the away team to win when they scored.
Not more hospitality, was it, George? Not more hospitality?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. I went with a Brentford supporting friend who couldn't get in the away end. I don't know if I should be admitting all this. I won't be allowed back next time. But it was a remarkable game. You know, Brentford could have and should have been ahead before they went ahead 1-0. West Ham, as you'd imagine, the pressure were on top throughout when they were 1-0 down, with Jarrod Bowen scoring a lovely finish with 10 minutes to go, only for one of the most incredible late winners I've seen. And what I loved the most about, for those who haven't seen it, it's a brilliant hit from Johan Wiese, who's had an unbelievable year, given in the summer he was you know, he was victim of an acid attack and ended up having emergency eye surgery in the summer, only to then be signed by Brentford and to be, you know, making his first steps in Premier League football. That was his first Premier League goal, having scored a couple in the cup. So an amazing story around Visa. But what I loved is that for the set piece before the goal, Jensen, knowing it was going to be the last attack, just to ensure it would be the last attack, probably took about 10 seconds to take the free kick, wasting time as much as possible, letting the clock run down, only for Visa's kick to be the last kick of the game to win the match. And incredible scenes in the away end. And Steve, it caps off what has been as good a start to a campaign from a promoted side as any we've really seen.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. We're not totally surprised, George, though, are we, from what we've seen in... You know, in the Championship. Listen, it's been great for Visa to come off the bench with you know, two massive goals for him. And I think he's been the last goal scorer in you know, three games already this season. Maybe that could follow him in for the rest of the season doing that. But they were, from a bookmaking point of view, we thought they were the best of the three promoted sides coming up. So we're not that surprised. I am personally surprised that they've done this well. There were 11 to 10 outsiders of three in the relegation market. Where are they now? I mean, Norwich were 5-6 and Watford were evens in that market. They're out to 8-1 in the relegation market, which I think says a lot. A point shorter than Leeds and 2 points shorter than Wolves, who have done fairly well over recent seasons, Georgie. And only 11-4 for a top half finish for 8-1. Listen, I've probably been a little bit optimistic by talking about them finishing, you know, in the top six, but that's a 20-1 shot. By no means am I expecting them to do what Forest and Newcastle did, I think it was in the 90s, by finishing third. You know, that, you know, coming up from the second tier. That's a huge, huge ask. Even players like, I mean, you know well, you watched him a lot in the Championship. And Mbeumo, who's just been scoring goal after goal. He's even hit the woodwork four times as well this season. You know, he's had a load of shots. He's just not been totally, you know, fortunate in getting more on the score sheet. So he's certainly to watch out. Playing in a different position. And Ivan Toney, he hasn't scored as many goals as his backers would like, George, but he's playing in a really unselfish role for the club at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. I mean, you mentioned there Mbeumo, who's kind of profiting, I think, from Ivan Toney being the marked man. You know, you see defence is almost doubling up on Toney. And Toney is a striker who's very happy to run the channels. He's very happy to drift into wide areas, very happy to drop deep to collect the ball as well. And that means that somebody with Mbomo's strengths, where he's got very, very clever movement, he's got pace to run in behind, he's got a hell of a cannon of a shot as well. I think he's being suited by playing against sides who don't look to sit in and frustrate Brentford. There's space behind for him to run into now. There's space behind for, I mean, Rico Henry was magnificent again at left back on Sunday. He's one of my favourite players. I think he's England's third best left back by a street at the moment, and possibly should be vying for those two for an England call up as well. And space for the wing backs to get in balls from behind. So Mbeumo definitely profiting. And I agree with you, where, you know, you say maybe we are overly optimistic. Now, I know you specialise in backing centre backs to score first. I specialise in good value losing bets. That has always been my speciality. And I think in 20-1 Brentford to finish top six, I think you've got a very good value probable loser there. I think they should be shorter. I think that when you look at that top six market, you know, you've got the top four are pretty much shoo-ins. United, the biggest price of the four at 1-20. Then you've got Arsenal and Tottenham at 11-10, Everton 2-1, Leicester 12-5. Now, if there was the reverse of that, I'd be laying Tottenham and Leicester for whatever you got at 11-10 and 12-5. We've seen precisely nothing so far this season to suggest that either one of those teams will finish in the top six. So by definition, therefore, some of those teams in behind have got to be value. I think the Leeds are probably a bit of value at 12-1 because they've had a slow start. We're starting to see them trend towards in the right direction again. I think Everton might be a bit of value at 2-1, but they're not particularly juicy prices for what is a bit of a punt. But Brentford, in terms of what we've seen so far, it's going to be an incredible effort for them to maintain that level of form. But from what we've seen so far, there's no way they're a 20-1 shot. You know, we see them go to teams like West Ham. We've seen, you know, and beat them at their own turf. Not many teams do that or have done that in the last 18 months or so. Seen them beating Arsenal on opening day. They're there by merit. And I don't see why they should be such a big price. I think the name and the trajectory they're on is being too much factored into that price for a top six finish.
We've just put a market, George, on Ivan Toney's Premier League goals this season. So I know he's absolutely smashed it to bits the last two seasons. and I'd be interested to know your thoughts on how many he'll get this season.
What's he on now? Is it three or four? Or is it two?
It's two. I think it's on two.
Okay. I reckon he will get 13 goals.
Yeah, that's a 9-4 poke. Yeah, so we're okay. 4-5. 4-5, 10 or fewer, 11-13, 9-4. So we're kind of thinking around there. I mean, 17-19, he's 12-1, and 20 or more, which will be a fantastic season for him. Gareth Southgate would have taken note by then, of course. He's a 33-1 shot to score 20 or more Premier League goals this season.
Another end of the market we're going to look at now is down towards the bottom end, because in more recent news, Watford sacked their manager, Cisco Munoz, and replaced him with Claudio Ranieri. So to discuss with us how that will change things at Vicarage Road, introducing David Cameron Walker, our producer of this show and regular from the Rookery End podcast. Dave, it's nothing new, is it? New manager to get used to. The old one goes. A few people watching on will think that 7 points from seven games, 14th placed after a promotion last season, seems fairly harsh. But from what I'm seeing, Watford fans maybe think this is the right decision.
I think it is the right decision. We'll get into that more in detail in a second. But just to pick something up from the top of the show, I'm in Leytonstone, and about two streets away from where David Beckham grew up, and just down the road from Whipps Cross Hospital, where he was born. So
that is my favourite. It's my local hospital too. So we share that. I'm not there now, but it's one of my favourite facts is that David Beckham was born in Whipps Cross. I think everybody should know that and appreciate it.
I do know.
But yeah, I mean, I can completely understand why, you know, the wider footballing world would look on at Watford again and sort of shake their head, roll their eyes and think, you know, what are they doing? There they go again, 7 points from seven games, what's the fuss? But the performances have not been good. I think, you know, that opening day win against Aston Villa was, I think we had a fair wind behind us. It was, you know, it's the first day, it was sunny, it was, fans were back in the stadium, new players, and we kind of flew out the blocks and got a few lucky goals, to be honest, that day. And we nearly messed it up. It could easily have been 3-3 at the end of that game, after being 3-0 up. And then it's kind of been pretty poor ever since. We beat Norwich, but everyone beats Norwich, unless you're Burnley. And, you know, the performances in defeats have been really, really bad, you know, especially that last one against Leeds last week. It just, you know, and the board made reference to that in their statement. They acknowledged the fact that this isn't about league position, about points on the board. It's about performances trending downwards. And if you look at our next eight fixtures, I think that probably played a part in their thinking too, because Watford's next eight games after the international break are Liverpool, Everton, Southampton, Arsenal, Man United, Leicester, Chelsea, Man City, which is a hell of a run. I mean, you're only really looking at Southampton at home on the 30th of October as kind of a nailed on winnable game. Get Everton away, Leicester away, Arsenal away. Maybe you get a point out of one or two of those games, but it's a really tough run. So I think somebody with the experience of Claudio Ranieri coming in, he's been there, he's done it, he's seen it all before. He won't be phased in the way that perhaps a very inexperienced manager like Cisco perhaps would have been.
David, the next four games: Liverpool at home, Everton away, Southampton at home, Arsenal away. We've got a market on how many points combined Watford will get over those four games. Could you give me your expert thoughts?
I think four points would be optimistic. Beating Southampton at home and getting a point in one of the away games against Everton or Arsenal, you know, you can't really bank for any points against Liverpool at home. But, I mean, it's after an international break. I think Liverpool had been lobbying to get that game pushed back, and the Premier League have said no, because of, you know, the situation with players returning from South America, some of the Brazilian players. So if you are going to catch Liverpool cold, like, that's probably the only time, you know, it's a Saturday lunchtime kickoff. So it's the only time you probably have a slither of a chance, but they'll still probably beat us. So I would say I would go for 4 points would be a good return from those four.
Yeah, 4-7 is 5-4. I'll just tell you that 0 points is 7-1, and 8-12 points is 20, with 1-3 points at even. So you're not that far away there.
7-1.
Yeah. Oh, come on.
It sounds like an emotional hedge to me. Yeah, Dave, the one thing that's maybe surprised me was the decision in terms of who they hired next in Claudio Ranieri. Now, I was vocal on Twitter in the summer saying I thought it's fairly likely that Cisco would be moved on pretty early on in the season, given Watford's history. Their succession planning has generally been very good in the past in terms of who they look to bring in to replace the outgoing managers. having a summer and having a couple of months in order to work out who they wanted to come in to replace Isco. Ranieri, despite obviously being a very well-respected coach, somebody who great job, you know, Premier League winner at Leicester, who's managed Chelsea before, but the most similar job he's had to this was the Fulham job, which he took over from Slavica Kanovic after promotion in a similar position after a poor start in the Premier League and couldn't really do anything to arrest the slide. Are you surprised it's him? Are you positive about the appointment and what it might bring?
I am a bit surprised that it's him. Apparently, there's some sort of relationship between Gino Pozzo and Ranieri. I think Claudio's actually been a guest at some games in the last year or so. They kind of know each other, obviously both Italian. I'm sure their paths will have crossed at some point over the years, you know, when Claudio's been in Italy as well, because obviously Gino's involvement in Udinese over there as well. So they'll be familiar with each other. So that sort of makes sense. But in terms from a footballing point of view, yeah, I am a bit surprised that we've turned to Ranieri. I can kind of see what Watford have tended to do over the last few years with these appointments is go from one thing to another. The pendulum swings in the opposite direction. Sisko is as a sort of brought in as an antidote to the surly, taciturn, disciplinarian Vladimir Ivic last Christmas, and he was this inexperienced, fresh-faced, smiley, bouncy guy who got the place happy and got it all moving. But as I say, the guy still managed only about 40 odd games in his whole career. So now they've gone for the most experienced manager out there. There's hardly anyone out there in the game that's as experienced as Claudio Ranieri now. This is his 20th club job, I think. So I can kind of see what they're thinking. They want someone to come in who can steady the ship and can steer us through some potentially rocky waters over the next few weeks. But the Fulham thing is the big concern. He's done okay, I think, at Roma and Sampdoria over the last few years. He sort of both times he came into them, those clubs, when they were in a bit of trouble and steered them to safety. The Fulham thing is a concern because I think there is, you know, we're in a similar sort of position as what Fulham were in terms of the results, but the squad, it was kind of a bit of a mixed bag of new signings and players that are, you know, slightly unproven, younger players, older players. So there are similarities there. I don't know if there are any mitigating circumstances at Ranieri's time at Fulham. I'm not sure exactly why that went wrong. Everyone was kind of expecting it to go well because it was his first job back in England after the miracle of Leicester City. You know, I'm under no illusions. I don't think we're going to be zooming up the table, and I won't even ask you for a price, Steve, on Watford winning the league. But I have to retain some optimism that he can come in and he can get us playing. And I think the big thing he needs to do is get the defence sorted out because we've been giving away goals. We've not kept a clean sheet yet, and some of the goals we've conceded have been pretty comical, really. So I think he needs to really just go back to basics with that defence, make us hard to beat, make us solid, because we've got good players in forward areas who are quick, who can hit teams on the break. So if he wants to make us a tough, sort of compact counter-attacking team, we've got the squad for him to do that.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, the Sampdoria job he did do was similar to this and very, very good. You know, he took over Sampdoria back in 2019 when they were bottom of Serie A. They finished 15th in the league that season and then last season finished 9th before he moved on. And I've seen a lot of talk about how well his side pressed. I think they ranked second or third for PPDA in Serie A. So I think you can hopefully anticipate some high-intensity, high-pressing football, which I think Watford fans would like to see and would take on well. Prices for relegation and to stay up, Dave, before I let you go, 4-6 to go down, 11-10 to stay up, meaning for those who maybe don't understand what the odds, basically more than 50% chance of relegation, less than half chance of staying up. Do you agree with that?
I think so. I think the thing we've all been doing since the start of the season is who are going to be the three teams that could be worse than us? Because, you know, 17th is very much the express goal this season. Norwich, tick. And then you're looking at maybe Burnley. I was speaking to the Athletic's Burnley correspondent, Andy Jones, the other day, and he was very down about their start to the season and how they're performing, despite the fact that Dyche has just been given a big new contract. So maybe them. You know, then you were looking at Newcastle, but obviously with the developments of the last 24 hours and the takeover looks like it's about to go through, you're thinking, oh, January, they could, who knows what could happen with Newcastle. So it's you're still struggling, I think, to see who are that sort of third team that might be beneath Watford. I think it'll be close. I think they'll be in the mix, but yeah, there's still a real chance we go down.
Yeah, I think the takeover is interesting there, David, what you mentioned with Newcastle. Their price has eased over the last 24 hours. They were 4-5 for relegation. They're now actually 11-8. For the drop. So the news of it has certainly, you know, pushed them out in the relegation market at least.
Time now to move on to the international stuff. But thank you very much to Dave from the Rookery End and our producer on this show for giving us his thoughts on Cisco and Claudio Ranieri, the new Watford manager. Just a reminder as well that you can sign up to The Athletic and save 33% on access to the best newsroom in sports. That's just £3.33 a month for the entire year. Just go to theathletic.com/footballpod. It's important to us that the listeners are in control of their gambling. This is a podcast for those who are 18 years of age and older, and please ensure that you are only staking what you can afford to lose. Do visit begambleaware.org for any information to ensure that you're gambling responsibly.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Now, the international break, Steve, is upon us. We're not going to spend too long going over it because, in fairness, the England match Saturday, 7:45, away at Andorra, there's not a great deal to get our teeth into. There have been a couple of changes to the squad since we spoke last week. Ben Chilwell has come in. James Ward-Prowse has come in to replace Calvin Phillips. And I'm pretty sure Gareth Southgate must have been listening to my tirade against him not bringing Tammy Abraham into the squad, because suddenly he was called up without even replacing anybody. So glad you're enjoying the pod, Gareth. Hopefully you're enjoying what we're about to say about your side now ahead of Saturday night's game. I'm actually going to the Hungary game on Tuesday night at Wembley as well. But let's talk about Harry Kane first and foremost, because he hasn't scored yet in the Premier League. It was a torrid summer for him in terms of the protracted move to Man City that never occurred. Here we come up against an Andorra side who have a plastic pitch. Gareth Bale called it the worst pitch he's ever played on. Harry Kane with his injury issues as well. This just feels like not the one for... I mean, it should be the perfect game for Harry Kane to get back on the scoring trail, but I'm a little bit concerned.
Yeah, I think the team sheet will be interesting, George. Could you imagine all the clubs with all their big money players looking at, you know, the managers and the board looking at the Andorra pitch? This England team to face them, listen, they're, what are they, 1-50 currently to beat Andorra. I will be interested to see the lineup. Players with a history of injuries. Harry Kane certainly falls into that bracket. I know he would be desperate for goals. He's still scoring for England. He's still scoring in the Conference League, the Europa Conference League, isn't he, as well? I wouldn't be surprised if Harry Kane doesn't start this and maybe, you know, he's ready for the game that you're going to on Tuesday night. From a Premier League point of view, yes, I know there's a narrative about him not scoring in August, but there's also one not in September as well, which would be a little bit worrying. But he's having more shots. He had six against the Villa. Only one of a decent note. Shame Dan's not here to chat about that. He did have five the week before against Arsenal. But his XG, George, at the moment, for the minutes that he's played, the quality that his shots he's having is similar to the likes of Traore and Trincao at Wolves. You know, he's on a par with those type of players at the moment. Nowhere near the stellar type of players that he's normally rubbing shoulders with. But he has still got nine this season. He's got one hat-trick as well. And yeah, predictably, I do have a market for this on his total goals for the season. So again, I'd be interested to know your thoughts. He's only 16-1 to be top Premier League goal scorer, by the way. So bear that in mind when you're going to give me his goal quote.
I still think, you know, we've seen Harry Kane scores in batches, and I think you can probably factor in at least five or six penalties that Spurs are going to get over the course of the season. So I'd still be anticipating that even a poor season for Kane, 15, 16 goals, I think, is still on the agenda. And I mean, can we rule out the fact that he might be playing for Manchester City for half the season as well? I mean, it's not a massive price.
Factored in. No, it has to be factored in, you know, these type of things. It's 7-4 for 15 or fewer, which I thought was on the short side. I mean, his goal record, as we know, I think the lowest amount that he's had in a season is actually 17. And he's got 18, I think, was the season before that. But then he goes 30, 29, 25 and 21 with a little bit of, you know, an injury record on top of that. So listen, he's 16-1 to score 25 or more. I'll probably be more leaning towards the 19-21, which is a 3-1 poke.
Interesting. I mean, I have a feeling there are going to be a few managers on the phone to Gareth Southgate ahead of this game praying, asking him, begging him not to play some key players. And one man who is featuring probably more than most people anticipated for Manchester City, certainly more than a lot of Villa fans who were telling him he was leaving Villa to sit on the bench at the Etihad, is Jack Grealish, who we didn't mention at the top of the show, ended up playing as a false nine for Manchester City on Sunday afternoon, which I don't think worked particularly well. But he's yet to break his England duck yet in 15 caps. And he's somebody who often gets criticised for maybe a lack of output. I mean, I've got my own thoughts on this, but I won't bore people with it, Steve. What do you make of that argument that it's maybe used to put down Jack?
Well, I mean, Gareth listened to you on this as well, didn't he, by getting by Jack
eventually
to the squad? Yeah,
well, took a while. See,
isn't that right, Gareth? No, I mean, I do speak to Villa fans about Jack now he's at Manchester City, and they kind of say, well, he's not the main man anymore. He's playing within himself. You know, he's all a little bit safe side to side. And clearly, you know, looking at his England record and, you know, the amount of appearances that he had, he hasn't scored, which will be a concern. I mean, he only scored six for Aston Villa last season, mainly from the left side of the penalty area. I was looking earlier, he had 51 shots last season and only six goals. Danny Ings had 51 shots last season and he got 12 goals. So it's not a big part of his game, is he, goal scoring? Clearly, he's played a lot of minutes so far for Manchester City, 592. And for a player to come in to a big club like City and picking him straight away, maybe he's not doing, you know, so bad after all. You know, his goal against Norwich was rather fortuitous, wasn't it? I think it missed three players and just hit him and went in. He had a decent chance against Chelsea as well. If you ask me, so, you know, how is he doing so far at Man City, probably be a 7.5 out of 10. But clearly there's a lot of scope to go on and prove him to be £100 million footballer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm personally excited. I mean, I love Calvin Phillips as a player, but I think it's been at times frustrating to see England playing with two defensive-minded midfielders, even though I think both Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice have underrated qualities on the ball. There's no denying that their responsibility in the side is a defensive one. And with Phillips out, we're going to have to see Southgate release the shackles, I guess, a little bit in midfield. He's got a few options. James Ward-Prowse is the player who replaces Phillips, and I'm sure we'll get minutes. We might see Mason Mount, who's back from injury as well, coming into the side in a more withdrawn role, which I think would suit him well. I think him and Rice would enjoy playing together, and they would have especially against weaker opposition, would be able to control the game from a more attacking standpoint. Jordan Henderson, another who's probably likely to get minutes. So interested to see how that's going to work out. I've spent hours this morning in my hotel over breakfast with my coffee trying to find a way to find a tip in this one, Steve. It's not easy when you've got England being such a short price favourite, but I've got a 15-2 tip, which I was trying to find something just like a bet builder or whatever. But I think Tyrone Mings at 15-2 to score anytime looks a massive price. I can't really work out why a 6'5", aerially dominant centre-back who's scored 6 goals for Aston Villa in 100-odd appearances, who goes forward for every set-piece. We know that England's centre-backs have a pretty good goal-scoring record against minnows. Fikayo Tomori, who, you know, there's every chance that Mings won't play, of course, but so you might want to wait for the team. But Tomori's 11-2 in the same market. 15-2 seems way too big. And when you factor in as well that there's a fair chance it'll be James Ward-Prowse putting in the free kicks in the corners, you've got to upgrade the likelihood of a centre-back scoring. So in the end, it was pretty easy. Having fiddled around with corners and bet builders and all this stuff, it was actually just an anytime goal scorer bet that hopefully will get us. We had a couple of winning bets last week as well. You mentioned Milner's yellow card. I tipped up the draw at 9-4 as well in Brighton-Arsenal. So fingers crossed a few people following what we have to say, and hopefully, you know, not too many bets available for this one, but maybe that 15-2 shot a bit of value for those who are looking for something over the course of the weekend. Still time to remind you to sign up to The Athletic and benefit from the hindsight of some of the best sports writers in the business for just £3.33 a month by heading to theathletic.com/footballpod. Thank you very much to Steve. As I said, get well soon. Dan, looking forward to having you back with us next week. And remember to hit subscribe so that you never miss a show. Leave us a review if you're feeling generous. You've been listening to The Athletic Football Podcast. Have a great weekend.
The Athletic.